107 FM Talk, 106.5, Mobile Mornings, Thursday style. Lots to talk about this hour, plus our buddy Rob Holbert from Landyap joins us at 8:30. Hey, talk about a lineup going on this month at Cottage Hill Package. We talk about, yeah, any day is a good day, of course, to go to Cottage Hill Package. But also, you can go for their special events. A couple that stood out to me coming up this month, Sweetwater Brewing, which I know Dalton and I are big fans of their products. They're going to be there at 6 o'clock on September 20th. Sweetwater Brewing having a free tasting event. And then, same night, how they can do this, I don't know. It's out of control. Sam Adams Oktoberfest tasting and their Stein hoisting that goes on. So one night you got Sweetwater Brewing and Sam Adams. Two, if you had to like find outside the area companies, mm-hmm. I got local brewers that are my favorites, but outside the area, Sweetwater and Sam Adams are two pretty big ones for me.
Did I hear you say they're hoisting steins?
They are hoisting steins.
Great.
That's Stein awesome. Hoisting going on to celebrate Oktoberfest.
I bet you there's pretzels somewhere in the mix.
Man, hot pretzels with mustard?
No mustard. Get that mustard out of here. That
mustard is perfect on a pretzel. Well, yeah, that's standard equipment. I'm going to upgrade to the XLT package get the mustard.
We won't have to share.
That's right.
That's fine.
Will not. And hot donut pretzel or steak, like the hard. Which one?
Either one.
Okay. I'll say that. Then the next night, September 21st, the Hometown Crew, Serta, has their brewing free tasting going on as well. So you got Sweetwater and Sam Adams on the 20th and on the 21st, Serta there.
That's great of them to do this for my birthday. Yep. Since my birthday's coming up on September 20th, they just happened to
pick. It lines up with your birthday.
Yeah, it's perfect.
All right, so hey, Manus family, we're going to celebrate Dalton's birthday at y'all's place.
Sounds good to me.
Bring some cake to have with the beer. All right, check them out online, cottagehillpackage.com, or search for them on Facebook. Keep up to date with all the great events going on at Cottage Hill Package. And of course, every day, go in and check out that huge selection of craft beers, the wines, the liquors, and the gigantic humidor. So big it has its own park ranger. His name is Billy. He is the tobacconist. He will give you a tour through that huge humidor. And, I mean, it's really, for me, it's pretty good because I'm not a cigar smoker, but I got people in my family, gift list people that are, and I can go in there and he remembers what I got before. He can advise me, and so I can always, kind of show up with the cool cigar, even though I know nothing about them.
So you're steering all your gift givers to the right place.
That's right. So good deal there. All right. This half hour, one thing to talk about is what has so many people talking, that op-ed in the New York Times. And the second part of this game is the game of Clue.
Right.
Butler with the candlestick in the pantry or whatever. But first thing that we have linked through, this op-ed, it's on our website, one of the three big things, top of the stack at fmtalk1065.com. Maybe you've read it by now, but if you haven't, let me run through this here. This is from the New York Times, put it out yesterday. They said, the Times today is taking a rare step of publishing an anonymous op-ed essay. We have done so at the request of the author, a senior official in the Trump administration. Y'all write all this stuff down. These are clues. Whose identity is known to us and whose job would be jeopardized by its disclosure. We believe publishing this essay anonymously is the only way to deliver an important perspective to our readers. And then they said, we invite you to submit a question, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Goes on to say, so anonymous op-editor. President Trump is facing a test to his presidency unlike any faced by a modern American leader. It's not just that the special counsel looms large or that the country is bitterly divided over Mr. Trump's leadership, or even that his party might well lose the House to an opposition hell-bent on his downfall. The dilemma, which he does not fully grasp, is that many senior officials in his own administration are working diligently from within to frustrate parts of his agenda and his worst inclinations. I would know. I am one of them. To be clear, ours is not a popular resistance of the left. We want the administration to succeed and think that many of its policies have already made America safer and more prosperous. But we believe our first duty is to this country. And the president continues to act in a manner that is detrimental to the health of our republic. That is why many Trump appointees have vowed to do what we can do to preserve our democratic institutions while thwarting Mr. Trump's more misguided impulses until he is out of office. The root of the problem is the president's amorality. Anyone who works with him knows he is not moored to any discernible first principles that guide his decision making. Although he was elected as a Republican, the president shows little affinity for ideals long espoused by conservatives, free minds, free markets, and free people. At best, he has invoked these ideals in scripted settings. At worst, he has attacked them outright. In addition to his mass marketing of the notion that the press is the enemy of the people, President Trump's impulses are generally anti-trade and anti-democratic. Don't get me wrong, there are bright spots that the near ceaseless negative coverage of this administration fails to capture. Effective deregulation, historic tax reform, and a more robust military, and more. But these successes have come despite, not because of, the president's leadership style, which is impetuous, adversarial, petty, and ineffective. From the White House to the executive branch departments and agencies, senior officials will privately admit their daily disbelief at the commander-in-chief's comments and actions. Most are working to insulate their operations from his whims. Meetings with him veer off topic and off the rails. He engages in repetitive rants, and his impulsiveness results in half-baked, ill-informed, and occasionally reckless decisions that have to be walked back. Quote here, there is literally no telling whether he might change his mind from 1 minute to the next, end quote. A top official complained to me recently. So I guess that's the anonymous. Exasperated by an Oval Office meeting at which the president flip-flopped on a major policy decision he had made only a week earlier. The erratic behavior would be more concerning if it weren't for unsung heroes in and around the White House. Some of his aides have been cast as villains by the media, but in private, they have gone to great lengths to keep bad decisions contained to the West Wing, though they are clearly not always successful. It may be cold comfort in this chaotic era, but Americans should know that there are adults in the room. We fully recognize what is happening, and we are trying to do what's right, even when Donald Trump won't. The result is a two-track presidency. Take that note down, too. Take foreign policy. In public and private, and in private, President Trump shows a preference for autocrats and dictators, such as President Vladimir Putin of Russia and North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un, and displays little genuine appreciation for the ties that bind us to allied, like-minded nations. Astute observers have noted, though, that the rest of the administration is operating on another track, one where countries like Russia are called out for meddling and punished accordingly, and where allies around the world are engaged as peers rather than ridiculed as rivals. On Russia, for instance, the president was reluctant to expel so many of Mr. Putin's spies as punishment for the poisoning of a former Russian spy in Britain. He complained for weeks about senior staff members letting him get boxed into further confrontation with Russia, and he expressed frustration that the United States continued to impose sanctions on the country for its malign behavior. But his national security team knew better. Such actions had to be taken to hold Moscow accountable. This isn't the work of the so-called deep state. Take that note, too. It's the work of the steady state. Given the instability many witnessed, there were early whispers within the cabinet of invoking the 25th Amendment, which would start a complex process for removing the president. But no one wanted to precipitate a constitutional crisis, so we will do what we can to steer the administration in the right direction until, one way or another, it's over. The bigger concern is not what Mr. Trump has done to the presidency, but rather what we as a nation have allowed him to do to us. We have sunk low with him and allowed our discourse to be stripped of its civility. Senator John McCain put it best in his farewell letter. All Americans should heed his words and break free of the tribalism trap with the high aim of uniting through our shared values and love of this great nation. We may no longer have Senator McCain, but we will always have his example, a lodestar, take that note too, for restoring honor to public life and our national dialogue. Mr. Trump may fear such honorable men, but we should revere them. There is quiet resistance within the administration of people choosing to put country first, but the real difference will be made by everyday citizens rising above politics, reaching across the aisle, and resolving to shed the labels in favor of a single one, Americans. All right, so there's the op-ed that ran in the New York Times. It has a lot of people talking today and a lot of people guessing whom it might be. President reacted to that yesterday.
If the failing New York Times has an anonymous editorial, can you believe it? Anonymous, meaning gutless, a gutless editorial. We're doing a great job. Hey, I asked the sheriffs, can you imagine this? We have somebody in what I call the failing New York Times that's talking about he's part of the resistance within the Trump administration. This is what we have to deal with. And, you know, the dishonest media, because you people deal with it as well as I do.
All right. And who might it be? Tucker Carlson yesterday said he knew, but he wasn't going to tell anybody.
First, though, the New York Times this afternoon published a remarkable op-ed piece. It was written anonymously. It's the work of someone who claims to be an official inside the Trump administration, a member of the underground resistance within the West Wing. We think we've got a pretty good idea who wrote this piece. We've called the White House for comment on it tonight. But until we confirm the identity, of course, we're not going to accuse anyone in public. We'll keep you posted on that. The piece does make a couple of points. The first is that the president is an unpredictable and mercurial boss who is light on policy detail and given to saying outrageous things. That is true. Sorry, it is true. If you've ever seen him give a speech, you already know that. One of the most striking things about Trump is that he's almost exactly the same in person as he.
All right, then it goes on there. So Tucker Carlson says he knows, but he's not telling yet. A lot of people think they know. We have the usual suspects roundup here, and we'll let you make your guesses, as some people have already done on the text line. We'll talk about this when we return right here on Mobile Mornings. Phone number, text line, 343-0106. 343-0106. We'll be right back. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Good news. Causeway back open. Even better news. You got tonight for $6.99 apps and dollar off drafts at the Causeway location of the original Oyster House. Go down and enjoy some live tunes as well. Causeway location. Make that your location, unless you're down at Gulf Shores. I mean, the Causeway, it's mine, but...
Mine.
Yeah, it's mine. I claim it, but you can claim it, too. Check them out. Yes, check them out online, originaloysterhouse.com. All their great events coming up and different ways they involve themselves in the community. They give back in a big, big way, and they give back every lunch and dinner with great, great seafood. More information online on their Facebook page and their website. All right. I read through the op-ed there, and just trying to set the stage because I want to make sure. I mean, I think a lot of people have read through it, but maybe some have just caught a clip here or there, and I like to put things in context. So, you know, we don't just deal with snippets. You get the whole thing out there. Looking through the text coming in here, and this is Supermom's doing kind of the whodunit part of it, and we'll get into that in a second. Supermom says, I don't think it's Pence. I don't think Pence's character would allow him not to say he wrote it. You know, I thought the same thing when I said, you know, it seemed Pence-like this morning, even though as soon as I said that in my mind, I said, but that could be a feign, that could be a red herring, that could be a crumb drop to put somebody, you would put things in to get them off your trail.
Because 2 hours ago, the VP's office... defiantly and definitely denies that VP Pence authored the New York Times.
Right, and people will believe that more than probably anybody else because of the character of Mike Pence. You would think that if anybody would be for sure telling the truth, you know, in Washington, which is a very small list, Mike Pence might be on that short list.
Well, one part of that editorial that had people pointing their fingers at the vice president was the use of the word lodestar, which is a guiding star for ships that are, you know, traveling. And Pence has notably used that word in a lot of speeches.
So therefore, if I'm somebody else, I put that in.
Yes.
To throw them off.
False flag.
They've also brought up that here, Mr. Kissinger brought that up at John McCain's funeral. He used the same word in his speech.
So it could be anybody there on Lodestar. People are saying, in other words, this texture said, in other words, Trump stopped even our gravy train, sincerely, the op-ed writer. P.S. Trump is for you peons. We aren't op-ed writer. So those are the reaction there. Let's see here. Somebody else said, the interesting unnamed texter says, Trump needs to clean house, especially when he wins in 2020. My question back to you, though, would be, clean house of the people that didn't write the op-ed? That doesn't seem to make sense. I mean,
he's been known to only trust his family, and that's why he keeps his family close to him in situations like this. Probably bolsters his reasoning with that. If he's looking left and looking right and wondering who wrote this, somebody so close in that circle of trust.
Maybe it's the closest person to him. Ben points out in the text line, he said, I think Trump wrote it to keep from talking out there. Very interesting take. So there's the list is out. I mean, we talked about it some this morning. Dalton, Newsweek has their list. I mean, Pence at the top here, but...
Yep. Newsweek put out a list of 5 that they think it could be, and CNN has a list of 13. So
of course
I might go through those also. But Mike Pence, he's at the top of the list for Newsweek and for a lot of people who are just guessing. I mean, Kelly just
read
it.
It's too easy, though. It's too easy. And he's denied it now, too. And I'm going to give him... Mike Pence has earned the benefit of the doubt with me. If that guy says he didn't do it, I'm going to take his side until proven 86 different ways that he lied. I just don't believe I don't believe he lies like that.
Another one on the Newsweek list, Mike Pompeo.
He's denied it.
He's denied it. James Mad Dog Mattis, he's also on the list. John Kelly, Dan Coats, the Director of National Intelligence. Jeff Sessions is on this list, but I would put him in that same category as Mike Pence. I don't feel like Sessions would put something out like this without putting his name on it. And like you mentioned, Sean, it's just it wasn't his style.
Yeah, because on the text line this morning, a couple people said, hey, Sean, do you think it's Jeff Sessions? I said... My sense, it's not. It does not seem like the way he does things.
And I'm also not sure how closely involved he is with the White House's decision-making.
Right.
It seems like he's kind of off doing his own thing.
Mm-hmm.
CNN, they also mentioned a couple other names that we haven't talked about. Don McGahn, who is, of course, a short-timer there at the White House and has already sat down for more than 30 hours with Mueller's counsel.
Mm-hmm.
I already said Dan Coats. Kellyanne Conway, a name mentioned here by CNN, who she was actually thrown under the bus by the president this week with that book coming out written by Bob Woodward. The Washington Post put out a transcribed phone call between Woodward and Trump where Woodward was saying, telling Trump that he offered him a time for an interview to talk on the book and Trump declined. Well, Kellyanne Conway walked into the room during that phone conversation and completely denied saying that she even told Trump about the interview request, and Trump even put her on the phone with Woodward where Kellyanne had to deny saying that that she would get him a meeting with Trump. Kirstjen Nielsen, she's also a name listed here, and Fiona Hill, who joined the Trump administration from the Brookings Institution. That's a D.C. think tank. So those are some of the names going around. Also, Nikki Haley, a name that's been mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm surprised we haven't heard Jared Kushner.
Well, you know, you can look at, if you go and say who is, the problem is, you would have to get it. I guess we could send an email back to the New York Times because they said send an email if you have any questions about the vetting process. When you say a senior White House official or senior administration, that means like Kushner is a senior advisor, assistant to the president, Ivanka Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Like we talked about Kelly and Sessions, Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
It has to be someone that's notable and knows their stuff to have that type of access, because the New York Times, agree with them or not, they're not just going to go on a he said, she said type of person. It has to be someone who has some sort of information that they saw many layers of that they could share in this article, because they're not going to lay their name on the line just for any old body.
No, I agree with that. And I think we have to establish, although it seems like anymore in the discourse out there, it's tough to establish norms and say things that we believe are true.
Amen.
And then argue in between, because that's kind of the way I see it. You establish, but now facts aren't facts or whatever. But my sense would say New York Times is not going to make it. The president saying, well, maybe they made it up. Y'all, I don't think that's possible. I mean, it's possible, sure. I don't think that's what happened. I think there is somebody to attribute this to. So I agree with that. Also, back to my other thing, I think is pretty true is Mike Pence doesn't lie, but I could be proven wrong. Days go on, but it just doesn't strike me as Mike Pence lying.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know Ben's assertion that maybe it's the president himself who wrote it to try to.
Well, and he has been accused of being his own PR person back in the day before he was a candidate. I think whoever penned this message, they know how to really get the president, right where it hurts, because loyalty is his big thing, and he has remarked on how he has kept people in jobs because of their loyalty, or how he's gotten rid of them.
But yeah, he's turned. But
well,
Let me finish.
And how he's gotten rid of people because of their lack of loyalty to him. And so if he feels that he can't trust someone that's near him, that will make your head spin. Because if loyalty, to some, loyalty is more priceless than money. To have that, to know that somebody will go to the ends of the earth for you, that's a big deal. And so this is probably why this is a real noogie to... Yeah, I said it to this situation, because that's tough to go to work and not be able to trust people.
One great tweet I saw from I can't remember who it was on Twitter, but they said if the purpose of this person's op-ed is to show that they're trying, that the shadowy administration behind Trump are trying to keep everything on the right track, then wouldn't publishing this op-ed anonymously do the exact opposite of what they're intending and just invite more chaos to the White House?
Yeah, and is this a sign of the existence or the lack of existence of the deep state? It's one of those questions. All right, Rob Holbert joins us here in just a couple minutes. Y'all stay close. FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings on this Thursday. Glad you're here. And our buddy Rob Holbert from Lanyap joins us. I want to roll some audio here because Rob, the astute and the man who pays attention here to details, he brought this to my attention. We've played the cut from Tucker Carlson a couple times this morning because last night Tucker Carlson on his show said he knew who it was, who wrote the op-ed. He was just going to get with the White House. Well, here he is. Here's Tucker Carlson.
We think we've got a pretty good idea who wrote this piece. We've called the White House for comment on it tonight. But until we confirm the identity, of course, we're not going to accuse anyone in public. We'll keep you posted on that.
Okay, so, Rob, you pointed out what?
Well, I mean, what's the comment going to be? we don't know who it is.
I mean, don't know who it is, so he's going to call the White House for... I mean, well said. Well,
hey, do you think it's this person? We don't know. Okay, there's your comment.
I mean, thank you for looking through that. I guess I was tired this morning when I got started.
It's amusing stuff, in a way. Yeah.
That Tucker Carlson, who is going to call the people who don't know whom it is to verify if it's that person. That is interesting. I got to ask you a couple questions here before we dig into a lot. And from the text line, somebody asked this question. I think this is a pertinent one. David says, ask Rob if he would ever publish an anonymous op-ed.
I knew that was coming. No, I wouldn't want to do that ever. Now, I'm going to say this. I would be amazed, 100% amazed, if somebody came in and said to the New York Times, we want to run an op-ed anonymously, and they said, okay, sure, let's do that, without saying, you're going to have to show us something. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to prove something to us first. You know,
right.
With the exception maybe of Mike Pence or somebody like that doing it, but I mean, if it's somebody...
I just don't think it's Pence, but I mean...
I don't either. It would be too self-serving, number one. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think if it's going to be some top official who's somebody who's not a household name, my guess is that they probably... I would assume that they would have to bring something in and say, okay, here's proof of these things.
Almost like collateral, in a way. I mean, opinion collateral. Like, if you're going to come in and do this anonymously, we got to hold this piece of information in collateral to make sure that you're not leading us astray.
You're borrowing. If you said to me, hey, I want to do an anonymous op-ed in the paper, and I would say, if I said, okay, you're borrowing my credibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You're saying, okay, well, you know, I'm saying, okay, I'm going to put my credibility out there that you are correct and that you are being honest. And I would want some sort of backup on that first. And I'm not saying I would do it. I've had 8 million people ask me if they could write anonymous op-eds, and over the years.
Really? Okay, that's something I didn't know. That's something that people ask to do. That
common.
Does it.
Very
okay.
common.
Okay.
Hey, could I write something for you and sign it under a pen name? It's common. You know, people think that that's something they would love to do. We always turn that down. However, I understand that these are, in their opinion, probably these are some desperate times. Perhaps this person who came to them is somebody who is who's big enough that you would say, whoa, wait a minute, you know. That's pretty amazing. But I mean, the reality of it to me, anyway, is that there's nothing that was said that is a shocker. I think we've seen this peeling out over the last week. First of all, but it's not anything we don't know. I mean, anonymous sources say that he called Jeff Sessions names. Do we think he calls people names that he doesn't like? Yeah, he does that all the time. So
yeah, Ted Cruz yeah. is a prime example right now. What's going on? He's going to go stump for him, and those two went back and forth. You know, when they were both running for president, Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
But I think that when we're talking about the different name calling, and we know Kellyanne Conway, which we talked about earlier, and her famous alternative facts line that she used, and yeah. it's easy to think why people may think of her, because in that recent phone call that we were talking about earlier with Dalton and the audio that was released. The president put her on the phone, and she got on the phone, and Woodard said, "Hi, remember 2.5 months ago you came over, and I laid out I wanted to talk to the president, and you said you would get back to me," and she said, quote, "I do, and I put in the request, but you know, it was rejected. I can only take it so far. I guess right. I can bring it right to the president next time." So,
right.
You know, so she basically put it out there.
It was rejected. You know, so, I mean, it obviously, you know, it obviously was brought over to them. He obviously tried to get the president to do this, and, you know, to talk to him. And the phone call, I'm sure, was just a, you know, it was the beginning of a CYA to begin with.
Yes,
you know,
it's
to get ready for to blast the book. But I mean, you know, we all know, I guess that part of this is you look at it and say, okay, what's the reaction? If somebody wrote an anonymous letter and said that all these insane things were going on over at, you know, FM Talk 106.5.
Which they
are, but I mean, yes. and we're going to have a big story on it soon. But if you have that go on and it's completely untrue, your reaction is not going to be this just volcanic, let's find this person. I mean, they've all but verified the fact that they believe that it is somebody there. They didn't say, we don't think this happened. I mean, they've said it, you know, kind of, you know, I guess the president has said it a little bit, but I mean, immediately they're calling for somebody to resign or be turned over.
And he talked about treason.
There's a person who did it.
Right. So, I mean, the treason tweet yesterday and this idea of handing somebody over means, that
right.
they're not, at this point, talking about the substance. They're talking about, you know, who did it. And I want to get to something because I want to segue in here. I don't think it's Attorney General Sessions. That's another one of my, it just doesn't seem like him. But you mentioned the insults, and that's you're writing about that. In the new issue of Lanyap out there, something I've talked about a bunch this week. Heck, I've been talking about this for quite a long period of time. But the president from Monday on, you know, where he basically insinuates that Attorney General Sessions should have done a better job of prosecution to not have Republicans under investigation than prosecuted during a midterm election cycle. And then this coming out of the Fear book, this not only a specific critique, if it is true, not just a critique of Jeff Sessions, but, you know, pretty underhanded comments about the South.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem that Trump has at this point is if some of those stories aren't true, he has done enough in public in making fun of people and going and being very personal to make it really hard for him to say, gee, that's not the kind of guy I am. I don't do those things. And so, you know, I mean, it's extraordinarily believable when you say he's making fun of his Southern accent, calling him a dumb Southerner, making fun of the University of Alabama Law School. Thank God he didn't make fun of the football team. He'd be in trouble. But, you know, those kinds of things, are they believable? I mean, does he... I think when you've seen the way he comports himself over the years, it's hard not to believe that... I mean, we know he's mad at Jeff Sessions. It's hard to believe that he would... I mean, it'd be hard for me to believe that he wouldn't have given him some dumb nickname by now.
Well, specifically...
Yeah, Mr. Magoo.
Because when he's mad at somebody, that's what he does.
He calls him Mr. Magoo.
Right, but I think the more interesting part of this... It shouldn't be a surprise he's, you know, would be dogging out, I don't know if it's true or not, but that he'd be dogging out Sessions. But the comment, I don't have it in front of me right now, but he basically, you know, a country lawyer down in Alabama. And that, I think, is interesting because it's that, if that is true, it's that kind of, because the president did quite well in Alabama and other southern states. People would argue, some people say the southern states put him in office. I would argue the Rust Belt states put him in office. But if you look at what he's saying, it's basically, I think I was talking about this yesterday, that it's the the person who they think they're friends, this person thinks that person's a friend with them, and they find out behind the scenes that they only hang out with them because their parents have a pool, and they get to go swimming, and they tell everybody else that that's a thing, and then they find out that, no, they really didn't like you, they just, you had a pool. In other words, that the president really didn't appreciate Southerners. This was all done, you know, for political gain.
Well, let me say, when he flew down here for that first rally in Ladd Peebles, you know, I thought he was extraordinarily tin-eared about the group he was talking to. I mean, at one point he asked everybody to raise their hand who had driven there in a Mercedes.
Yeah.
his was the only hand that went up. That wasn't his crew. That wasn't his group. But it's kind of ridiculous to ask. And I think that I don't know what his thought process is about people in terms of groups, but he's always seemed to express that, you know, whatever it is he's doing is the best, and if you're not doing what he's doing, then it's not good. And so I don't know. I mean, it's certainly just a dig. You know, everything is a dig with him. It's to try to find something that hurts that person he's angry with. So, you know, their height or their accent or whatever it is. That, you know, it just goes to he goes right to those visceral things.
Yeah, you point out in Dan the Torpedoes this week, you quote, right now Sessions is living the Washington version of having your high school girlfriend running around telling everyone she's about to break up with you before she actually does.
It is kind of that way, you know, isn't it? I mean, Sessions knows he's going to be dumped here. You know, it's coming. You know, his book is going to be fascinating. It's just going to pile on. I mean, I've listened to some really interesting podcasts lately. One of them was called Slow Burn, and it's about Watergate, and it's fascinating. People should listen to it because the parallels are amazing when the president just starts punching in all directions and punching people who are on his side, and it's just, it has gotten kind of that way. It's a lot of real interesting similarities, but this latest stuff is just bizarre. You know, this letter and you know, it just adds to this circus that's going on. But is it super surprising to me that there are people in the White House who are trying to keep him from doing harm to the country? No, I don't think that's really super surprising to me.
And but also in deference, I read through that op-ed. It is somebody who says, you know, this president, this administration is being attacked relentlessly from the left.
Yeah.
You know, but and he's doing some good things. I want to, you know, there's some balance, and that may be part of a feign. It may be part of a feign, but
I mean, personally, I believe that was written by more than one person. Just looking at it, that's just me. But when I look at it, I think that was written by more than one person. At least somebody was involved in writing it who was a writer, and I think that there's, you know, that's just me looking at it. I could be wrong, but I think there's probably more than one person involved in it.
I did want to point out, we talked about the word treason. According to Merriam-Webster, treason is the offense of attempting by overt acts to overthrow the government of the state to which the offender owes allegiance, or to kill or personally injure the sovereign or the sovereign's family. And the second definition as part of this, the betrayal of a trust known as treachery.
Yeah, I think treason is pretty heavy at this point. I mean, you know, he's the president, but he's not the country, and he's not the government. And it's not illegal to point out the things that the shortcomings that they think that are going on there. You know, it is unique to have this situation occur where somebody's writing an op-ed that is anonymous. My guess is this person will be flushed out pretty shortly. I would doubt that you know, that it's going to stay secret for a real long time. And you know, and I'll say this too to the listeners, you know, I've had people that I've recorded before, then when we write something, say, I didn't say that, and call me up and say, I didn't say that, and I play the recording for them, and they still say I didn't say that. So, you know, people are, you know, when you say, well, gosh, why would somebody say they didn't say it if they said it, people do that. It happens all the time. So it's not, it's surprising at all that people are, you know, even if the writer said they didn't write it, it wouldn't surprise me.
All right, let's talk about the new issue of Lagniappe out on streets now, and possibly in your front yard if you're subscribing.
We don't throw in the front yard. It'd be in your mailbox.
In the docks, yes.
We're not going to let it blow down the street.
That's right.
Wash away in a tropical storm. Yeah, we've got on the cover is the brand new federal courthouse. The beginning of this $117 million judicial complex that is going on. So I just wanted to do a little piece on that opening up. It's a pretty exciting new building downtown. They actually went out and found the limestone quarry that matched the buildings around it, and from it was built 50-60 years ago and built it from the same stone just to make it fit in. So it's kind of neat looking.
And the Corinthian columns, nice touch.
Corinthian leather is a real nice.
Yes,
touch.
Ricardo Montalban told us that many times. And if people want to get this copy or any of the other copies of Lagniappe, walk us through how to do that.
Pick us up at 1,500 locations all around Mobile, Baldwin counties in our beautiful pink and purple boxes. You can also check us out online at lagniappemobile.com, or you can get us for $1 a week to your post office box or your mailbox at home. Just go to the website and sign up for home delivery.
All right, Rob, we appreciate it, and I'm going to forward all these emails of people that want to write anonymous op-eds for you.
I'm sure, by the way, I'm saying it's Melania. I think she's the one who wrote it.
Or Melania. Or
Melania.
Yeah, we'll call the whole thing off. 851 FM Talk 106.5. We're coming right back. FM Talk 106.5. I would read a couple texts here, but first, Kelly's got some breaking news.
Yeah, there's an active shooter situation. This is in downtown Cincinnati at this point. Fox19.com confirming that two people are dead, four critically injured. This is at the 5th Third Bank in Cincinnati. Again, we'll keep you posted on all new updates, and we'll post on social media.
All right. Let's run through some of these texts here. Unnamed texter here says the op-ed seems to be a compilation of all the criticisms and lies from the media. I think they wrote it. I guess he means New York Times or the media in general. I don't know. And published it. More fake news. Fred says, sounds like it's the work of the shallow state.
No.
Phil says, the person, if they are even real, wrote it not for the country, but to save their own skin and out of worry or threat to their way of life in the swamp. This idea that's come up, people saying this is definitely pushback from the swamp, and this means President Trump is doing a good job. That's why you're having this reaction.
Yeah, I think it might serve twofold. If the person is truly, patriotic and doing things they believe on their behalf of the country, I think that is part of it. But yeah, I think the major part is they're probably trying to preserve a political career following Trump.
Whether it might be self-interest,
whether it's two terms or what, they want to have their words. And I guess they wouldn't really be on the record if this was anonymous, but trying to save a little skin.
All right. Jim says, anyone thought about a fellow by the name of James Comey? Not too many know more or hate Donald Trump more. Wouldn't be the first time he wrote fiction. Okay, Jim. I would say interesting, but at the same time, there's so many ifs. If I'm to believe what the New York Times used as its slate underneath where it says anonymous op-ed, says I think a senior administration official, which Comey would not fit the definition of. Like I said, I can only work off the information out there. And if those things are true, I wouldn't think it would be Comey because he's not employed anymore, let alone a senior administration official. Wes says, could this be bait to draw out the swamp? And this is idea that it's maybe I'll be proven wrong one day, but this idea that everything that happens in Washington is some three-dimensional chess going on at a high rate of speed. I don't buy all of that. That's why I don't buy 95% of the conspiracy theories that float in here with the flotsam and jetsam to the radio station.
A real life whodunit. So we need Columbo, Angela Lansbury, Matlock. Who else? Nancy Drew. Who else should be on the crime? Law and Order, of course.
Okay, but I would point out too, Angela Lansbury. So Murder, She Wrote,
yes.
Side Story. If y'all can Google this and let Google track you here, because we're about to run out of time for this show. But if you look at the number of episodes of Murder, She Wrote, and the number of obviously murders, and the town, the fictional town where it's set, and the population there, it has a murder rate of like 38%. Whatever the little town is where Murder, She Wrote was, has the highest murder rate of any place. It makes every crime-ridden city that you've ever seen look like Mayberry.
You know, I love this. Last week we were talking about Heart to Heart.
Yes.
Now we're talking Murder,
yes.
She Wrote.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic stuff.
I'm showing my age for sure.
Mine, too. I'm okay with it.
You're my younger sister. Now, come on.
You're my older brother.
That's right. 858 FM Talk 106.5. And then we got the baby here, the surprise.
Right. Hey, now.
All right. 858. We're out of here. I'll be back at noon today for Midday Mobile. Laura Ingram tackles all this next. Y'all stay close.